So the theme I want to explore together with you this morning is the theme of practicing with anger. Understanding and practicing, being skillful with the emotion of anger.
Your mic's not on.
Thank you. So this theme of practicing anger, that's the theme today, came out of a request from last time, if you remember, that we were exploring a different topic, and we went to the theme of anger, had some discussion on it, and there was a lot of energy for exploring the question of anger in more depth. And I think it's very much a theme that needs attention, very crucial theme in our practice. And it's a very, very confusing area for many people, maybe I would say most Westerners, and probably many people around the world. It's a very confusing emotion, and maybe more confusing for Western Buddhists. So the short summary of my talk is this. There are many reasons for anger being quite confusing for us, and it being challenging to know how to work with anger when it arises. Part of the resolution of this is by understanding that there are different forms of anger, that there are different types of anger, some of which can be helpful and some of which may not be helpful. And that the tools of our practice, mindfulness, heart practices, cultivating wisdom, developing skillful speech, give us some very important means by which to work skillfully with anger. And I'll be talking about all of that. But I want to start off by talking about confusion about anger. It's one of my favorite topics. And I mentioned that the book that I have out there has some material. I have a whole chapter on anger because the book was about connecting inner and outer transformation. And anger is a huge theme for anyone who is working in social service or social change, social justice. Huge theme, very confusing theme. Okay, so let me mention, first of all, just a number of reasons why anger is both an important topic and why it's confusing. And then I'll move on to talk about how we practice with anger, which will be the heart of it. And maybe I'll find a way to invite us to work with this in the next week and then bring this some into my talk next week, because it could be very related to how we deal with a large collective issue. So first of all, in my own experience as a teacher, anger is a subject of inquiry very, very often. It's one of the themes that's right at the top of the list. I would say the top three on the list are how to work with anger, how to deal with the judgmental mind, and relationships. Do these go together? Perhaps. But people ask more questions about these areas than about enlightenment, death, and sex. Okay. Although those are up there too. Okay. And so a very crucial topic and very challenging, as I mentioned, in terms of issues of justice or wanting to change things, can be very, very important area. And of course, also very crucial for us in terms of this large central question for our practice is, how can we be skillful with strong emotions, with difficult or challenging emotions, right at the core of our practice? So a lot of confusion. Part of it is from what we apparently get from the Buddhist tradition. You read the text, and you seem to get the very clear message that anger is bad. a few passages. This is the Buddha from the Dhammapada. And I think it's crucial to remember that this is a translation. Okay, and I'll come back to that issue because translation actually is a significant issue here. But this is what the translator says. Give up anger. Conquer anger with non-anger. If one is not angry, then one enters into the presence of the gods. Guard against anger erupting in your body. Guard against anger erupting in your speech. Guard against anger erupting in your mind. It's from the Buddha. From the 8th century, from the Mahayana tradition, Shantideva, text, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Again, remember this is a translation. Whatever wholesome deeds, such as venerating the Buddhas and generosity that have been amassed over 1,000 eons, will all be destroyed in one moment of anger. Mm. Okay. And this is a contemporary Thai teacher named Chuen Phang Cham. Anger can be compared to a snake, a poisonous cobra. We should not welcome it into our house. Without contemplation, we cannot know the real danger of anger. So we need to meditate on the anger to know its danger. When anger becomes the master, the body is burning because the mind is burning. That is why the world is crying today. It is burning from anger. So we need to get rid of this anger, let go of the anger. Meditation and contemplation can help us to do this. So it seems to be a very clear message. So the voice of some contemporary Buddhist teachers give a different view. Again, Western Buddhist teachers. Jack Kornfield, who sometimes teaches here. We can find gold in the anger we have. For within anger is the valuing of justice and integrity. When we work with anger, it can be changed into a valuable medicine. Transformed, our anger and judgment give us clarity to see what is skillful, what needs to be done, what limits need to be set. They are the seeds of discriminating wisdom and a knowing of order and harmony. Very different message, right? Yeah. Anger can be positive or constructive. This is from Bell Hooks. Some of you know her work. This is from a book called Killing Rage, Ending Racism. Confronting my rage, witnessing the way it moved me to grow and change, I understood intimately that I had the potential not only to destroy, but also to construct. Many African Americans feel uncontrollable rage when we encounter white supremacist aggression. That rage is not pathological. It is an appropriate response to injustice. However, if not processed constructively, it can lead to pathological behavior. Right? And then one more comment. This is from the Tibetan tradition, where I should say that the message is a little bit different. Some of you know, in Tibetan tradition, there are wrathful deities who actually play a constructive role in coming to awakening. So it's complex, but you can see why we getting all these messages might be confused, right? You can hear all these different messages. This is a Judith Simmer Brown from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. The energy of our anger can be transformed into positive and skillful action for others. Anger transforms into compassion. The energy of anger itself is completely pure. So if we give up the dualistic quality, that energy becomes compassion, which can then benefit others. So the messages we get seem to be contradictory. Again, we read the text and so forth. And I'll mention, maybe right now is a good time, that there actually are major translation issues. The words that are translated as anger, when you look closely to their connotations in the original Asian languages, they're words like dosa especially, which is one of the three poisons, some of you know, it's sometimes called that. Words that are sometimes translated as anger, like dosa, are exclusively negative and probably closer to hatred. The Dalai Lama engaged in a dialogue about this with particularly Western psychologists and concluded, because of the differences in connotations between the words in the different languages, he concluded that nothing suggesting the kilesa, which is the term for greed, hatred, and delusion, nothing that has this exclusively negative connotation should ever be translated as anger. Because anger in Western connotations has both positive and negative connotations. So you see, there's even in the translation, there are issues of difference between the actual meaning of the words. So I would say that those translations that I read from the Buddha and from Shantideva may be problematic translations. This is not yet meant to clarify everything. This is just to say, here are some of the roots of the confusion. Add to this the fact that anger in Western culture is very, very confusing. When you look to the words that we would translate as anger from the different languages, going back to the ancient Jews, the ancient Christians, we find a lot of confusion. One author on a book on anger named Carol Tavris said that anger may be the most misunderstood emotion in the history of Western civilization. And a few examples can bring this out. You have basically in both Jewish and Christian traditions, I imagine it would be similar in Islam, I don't know, you have a lot of passages which suggest that anger is quite bad. This is from the Jewish tradition, a few passages. God loves one who never gets angry. Do not get angry and you will not sin. But then, what happens if you read the Hebrew Bible closely? Of course, who gets angry? God gets angry. Okay, so what does this mean? No, not only God, but the Jewish prophets get angry, right? Really angry at injustice. And it seems to be something positive. This is from Abraham Joshua Heschel, who wrote a very powerful book on the Jewish prophets. He said, anger too is a form of God's presence in history. Anger too is an expression of God's concern. And it actually interprets it as a manifestation of compassion. And you can see the same thing in the Christian tradition. You can see plenty of passages where anger is seen as bad. It's one of the seven deadly sins. I don't know if people use that model these days, but historically it's been used widely. One of the seven deadly sins, but then also you find what? Jesus gets angry, right? With the money changers, main example, right? Tosses them out, seems to get angry. And you have a lot of expressions historically of anger being something that is suitable and appropriate when there's injustice. You can find this in a lot of the theological writings. You can find this, for example, in Thomas Aquinas. Anger at injustice is appropriate. So we start to get a sense that some forms of anger are okay and some not, but how do we know? You know, and they don't spell it out necessarily. So again, can be a source of a lot of confusion. And in the kind of the Western social justice tradition, you can find often anger is seen as quite positive. Anger at injustice is seen as appropriate. And this is from the French writer Georges Sand. Humanity is outraged in me and with me. We must not dissimulate nor try to forget this indignation. This is about injustice, which is one of the most passionate forms of love. So saying anger is deeply connected with love. And you can find this in the writings of people like Gandhi or Dorothy Day or Martin Luther King. They all say that we have to take the energy of anger at injustice and channel it and make it workable. They all say it can be tremendously harmful, but it can be channeled. So you can see why there can be some confusion. We get different messages between traditional Buddhists, contemporary Buddhists, there are different messages in Western culture. You know, some anger is sometimes bad, anger is sometimes good. And then we have the different cultural issues where, by and large, anger is not an acceptable emotion in a number of cultures, particularly Northwestern European culture, which is the dominant, has become the dominant culture here. You know, and anger is much more readily expressed in terms of Europe, in Eastern Europe, and in Southern Europe. I knew this living in Little Italy. During the summer, the windows were open, and one knew the exact state of most marriages by walking down the street. Could hear how things were going, you know? And yet, dominant culture, anger is kept inside, as it is in a lot of cultures, right? A lot of Asian cultures as well, you know? And very interesting, you know, when I've, you can find this if you look closely at some of the Asian cultures as well. And the public expression of anger, often not appropriate, you know? And so, and it gets complex. I won't go so much into that. But it can be, do you get a sense of the basis for all this confusion? And what happens when someone actually comes to Buddhist practice? It can be very confused. And then we have the additional confusion of the fact that for a lot of us, we may have been raised to suppress anger. Different conditioning in different families. For many of us, we were taught not to be angry. I think this was my upbringing. Anger is not good. Don't be angry. And then we come to Buddhist practice, and what kind of message do we get? We might get the message, since I've been sent to this issue, I've tracked Dharma talks, and I've tracked what people say, and 90% of the messages I hear is that anger is bad, it's reactive, be careful, right? Without much more clarification. And we can get that message, and what happens if you have a history of suppressing anger and you become a Buddhist meditator? You might have a traditional justification for your own conditioning and a reason to not investigate it. And this has actually been a significant problem, I would say, at Buddhist centers where there's often been not so much skill in dealing with conflict because the public expression of anger, isn't that a sign of spiritual immaturity? And do you see how many people could have that understanding, or at least be, should I express my anger? Doesn't this show I'm not really practicing rightly? Do you get that? It's powerful. Okay, so with all that confusion, how do we approach anger? Well, we do what is really one of the glories of the tradition is, we investigate. We practice, but I want to suggest that the core way really to find this out is to investigate our anger, to be with it, to look into it, to work with it skillfully. And what I want to do is give a few guidelines or perspectives for working skillfully with anger, and then invite you, if you feel called, to really track any anger, even minor irritation, in the next week and work with it. So here are a few perspectives and guidelines. But the first part of the talk is important because it can, do you get a sense of all these conflicting, even contradictory threads that go into our conditioning about anger, into our understanding, especially if we become Buddhist practitioners? Very, you know, very challenging. I mean, hard enough even if we weren't Buddhist practitioners. With all the Western cultural, or for that matter, from other cultures as well. So a few perspectives. The perspectives that I'm going to offer come from my own investigation, and they're really hypotheses to be checked out, the initial ones. The main tool is going to be our own investigation. You know, as in the traditional teaching from the Kalama Sutta, which says, don't trust the words of the teacher, check it out yourself. core teaching about the centrality of investigation, finding things out for yourself, not taking things because they're in the books, because someone said it, but really seeing for yourself what is true. So a few guidelines that I have found helpful in relationship to anger from my own investigations, again, to be explored yourself. The first is that anger can be extremely destructive and negative, but that there are a number of situations in which anger is not simply negative, not simply compulsive aversion. In other words, anger can potentially carry wisdom, love, and ethical energy. Again, that's a main thread of the Western traditions, that anger at times can come from love and the wish for integrity, justice, rightness, whatever. Anger can be explored very skillfully with our mindfulness. We can work skillfully with anger when it's occurring in the moment, and particularly important are to work with how to work with speech and how to work internally when there's anger occurring. A key starting point is to separate the awareness and investigation of anger from action. A very key guideline is when anger is reactive, it's very helpful to suspend action. What we're going to be doing is actually finding that there are different types of anger. There is the more reactive, compulsive, automatic anger is the kind that typically is destructive or negative. And a very key distinction is between the harmfulness of anger when we act unconsciously or automatically versus the presence of anger in our minds or hearts, which isn't necessarily negative. Again, sometimes we get the message, oh, you're angry, must be some kind of spiritual blindness. Yeah, I do not find that to be the case. So, again, the key is going to be mindful inquiry into anger. And I'll tell a story from my own experience. I've been interested in anger for a long time. But I had this retreat about quite a while ago, about 25 years ago, which was really instrumental. And I was newly arrived in California. I had been living in Kentucky and Ohio for 7 years, teaching there. And I had been kind of working out my own understanding of Buddhist practice in the hinterlands, away from the coast. And a lot of it was a focus on daily life. I had been doing retreats for some time at that point, but I went to a retreat in San Rafael. I think it was at the Dominican College, where there still are sometimes retreats. But we used to do a lot of retreats there. And I did a retreat, and it was no different than many I had done in the past. But perhaps it was the timing, but I started to get very angry. The content of my anger was that in the retreats, we were treating the retreatants, or the teachers were treating the retreatants, as if they were monks or nuns. But we had different kinds of lives, like in the world. And shouldn't the training be different? That was the content of my anger. And I got really angry. It was interesting because I had, been in these retreats for a long time and this had not occurred before. So it was partly related just to my years trying, really focused on daily life practice, I think. Anyway, I was really angry, got really angry, and Jack Kornfield was one of the teachers, and I went to talk with him. And he said, I have some sympathy with the content of your anger. I can relate to it in some ways, but I think we're going to do this retreat like we've planned. And you have a choice. You can either stay with the retreat or you can go home. And if you stay with the retreat, my suggestion is that you really work mindfully with your anger. And I chose the second option. I chose to stay with the anger. And for whatever reason, the anger did not dissipate. I was angry about 18 hours a day for 10 days in a row. I don't remember that having happened previously in my life. And it was in a range where it was all workable. You know, sometimes it got pretty strong, but I was mostly able really to track it, be mindful, you know, do other practices. And Jack gave me a suggestion, which was using a technique that, one of the techniques that we had learned from one of the Burmese teachers, Upandita, which was a technique, simple technique, of taking a note or two after every sitting or walking. So he had me take notes as to what my experience was after every sitting or walking, you know, just a sentence or two. And then after 3 or 4 days, I looked at my notes and I reported to him. And it was very interesting because I had never investigated anger much at all. I mean, maybe I'd been with it for 20 minutes or something. But to look at it hour after hour after hour, day after day after day, take notes, I saw things about anger I had never seen before. The first thing I saw was that there were multiple kinds of anger. Sometimes my anger was petty and reactive, kind of coming from a small self, and just, I'm not getting my way, I'm angry, I want my way, right? And that was there sometimes. It was kind of a petty reactive anger, more self-centered and so forth. I explored how anger was in the body, you know, and let me go back to the point about the types of anger. Sometimes, because one of the one of the ways he guided me was to say, watch the anger, but also watch when it changes into something else. And so sometimes I could see there was just that petty anger. There was just that anger, and that would sort of come and go and dissipate. Sometimes I would see that I was angry, and when I would stay with it, it would open up to sadness. And sometimes the content of my sadness would be, oh, I feel alone here. I think I have a good point, but I just feel alone. And it kind of triggered some of those deeper psychological feelings, we might say, or deeper feelings of being disconnected or alone, and that connected with a lot of stuff from my past. We all have some version of this that can get triggered at different times. So that got triggered in a certain way, and so sometimes I would find the sense of sadness that was familiar and related to other types of experiences. Sometimes I would stay with it, and I would feel the anger, but I would feel quite connected. It would go to some sadness. Oh, I think I have something really important to say, and people aren't listening. And sometimes I would stay with the sadness and would open up to love. Like, I really care about this community, and this is a really important point, and it's really important to me. So in that instance, I could see experientially that the anger actually in that instance was connected with love. It was generated by care and by love, something quite beautiful in a way, right? It wasn't totally diluted and negative. It was something, I think I have something important to say here, right? And that was there. Sometimes the anger would feel like that of a Hebrew prophet. And I'd be there, and there'd be this deep sense of righteousness would come over me. You know, my spine would straighten, and I would say, you can do what you wish, but cosmic justice will win out in the end. Watch out. that was interesting to track, you know, to see like Old Testament prophetic wrath appearing in my consciousness, right? And that was there sometimes. You know, it was also important to see the way the anger manifested. It would sometimes be in the body with fire. Sometimes there was nausea. You know, just to stay with it, just to explore the way the anger was, to see that where the thoughts went. And doing this over this period of time was incredibly illuminating. And in a sense, anger's never been the same since then. I got to see things that I had never seen before. So when we work with anger, we can work in some of these ways. We can say, what's it like in the body? Really explore, see what it's like. What are the narratives that are coming? Stay with it. When anger shifts, where does it shift to? Because anger, most psychologists would say that anger is a cover emotion, that it's actually generated by other emotions beneath it. What are those emotions? In my case, I could see that some of it was love and came from actually a very deep and beautiful place. And this was actually behind the anger. I think this is the case at times with the wish for justice, you know, but I could touch some sadness, and then beneath the sadness was the love, you know. And often, the key to working skillfully with anger, and this actually comes up with social justice, or I think with interpersonal issues as well, is actually moving from the anger and feeling that there's some pain connected with it. You know, that there's some way something important for oneself is not happening. This is for the kind of anger that may carry wisdom or ethical energy. There is totally a kind of anger that is petty, reactive, and destructive when it manifests. So I'm pointing to a distinction between types of anger, but how are we going to know? And sometimes it's a matter of really staying with it and going more deeply, because we can actually have anger that is actually ultimately based in love, but we're not in connection with the love or compassion, and our anger can be quite destructive there as well, right? So this is where the practice comes in, of really touching more deeply. So, there's a line that I heard from Joanna Macy. She says, where anger goes sour is when it denies its source in pain. When anger gets locked into self-righteousness, where we're not in touch with the pain, because we haven't gone deeply enough, and we're just locked into self-righteousness in some way. That's where anger becomes a problem, and we know that, where it becomes destructive. So we can actually be, as it were, on the side of justice, but the anger can be reactive. This is what is so confusing for many activists, right? Clearly, we're on the right side. Therefore, whatever I say is okay. But actually, that's not skillful, because one can get lost in the anger. It becomes reactive and polarizing. What I'm going to suggest is that the skillful use of anger connects it with the heart, as with some of those earlier quotations, that the heart can be linked with the anger, so we actually feel the pain, we feel the sadness, or the distress, but we also ultimately act more out of compassion and out of love. So see, this is a process. This is really suggesting that even though we may have an ethical point on our side or justice on our side, if we don't go through that process, the anger can be destructive. I think of a cartoon, I think from The New Yorker, which shows an epitaph on someone's grave, and it says, he had the right of way. Another way of making that point.
Could you repeat that quote from
Joanna Macy? She says, where anger goes sour is when it denies its source in the pain. In other words, when we get locked into thoughts, ideology, self-righteousness, without connecting to the heart, that's when anger is going to be a problem. Even if, again, we have ethics, justice on our side. That's tricky, isn't it? That calls for a certain amount of inner work that says that activists who don't do that inner work may be actually not so skillful, or not so skillful. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask, right? But that's true. I once did a workshop with people who call themselves spiritual activists, and I asked, what are the major issues in your groups or organizations? And the top one listed, anger and conflict towards each other in our organizations. And because they didn't have skillful ways of working with anger, and it was assumed that the anger was all righteous and therefore they could do what they wish with it. Right? One of my former students is a man named Robert Masters, who has written a number of books. He wrote a wonderful book on anger, and I was a teacher of his when he wrote a PhD dissertation on anger, 450 pages. And in a sense, I helped him write parts of it. We had sections on Buddhism and anger, but it was wonderful, wonderful piece of work, and he made it into a book, which is quite wonderful. I'm tempted to say masterful, but that would be not so helpful. And he also wrote a nice article, which you can find on the web, called Compassionate Wrath. I really strongly recommend it. It won the year it was published. It was published in the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology and won the prize for the best essay of the year. And wonderful essay. You can find it. There's a PDF file that's on the web. And he, I really enjoyed working with him. He was an unusual student because he was, when I met him, he was a retired guru.
Really?
I won't get into that so much. But he developed a wonderful typology of two skillful ways to work with anger. I'm going to talk about some others, but he talked about mindfully held anger. And he also talked about hard anger, anger which actually is in connection with our open hearts, and where we can actually express anger, but be coming from a different place. And he interpreted Jesus with the money changers as being an example of hard anger. You can also find it in a number of spiritual traditions. Example, you can find it, some of you may know the story in the Tibetan tradition of Marpa and Milarepa. Milarepa was the great yogi who built multiple towers, and Marpa had him tear them down continually. It was a way of doing character training because Milarepa happened to be a serial murderer and needed some character work. Okay, that's a short version. you can investigate maybe another time the full story. But there are plenty of examples. So Robert talks about hard anger, which is quite beautiful, this sense of anger where the heart is connected as a possibility interpersonally, as well as socially, as well as in relation to oneself. So a few other pointers for practicing with anger. I think mindfulness is probably going to be the key to also to use the wisdom factor, very crucial with anger. Obviously, in an interpersonal conflict, we can ask, what's my role in this interaction? We can ask questions about that. What is beneath my anger? And we can use mindfulness, but we can also sometimes ask questions. Is there something beneath my anger? Is there some kind of need not being met? Is there some need of the other that's not being met? That helps us move to empathy for self or for other, which is very key to working skillfully with anger. In other words, the place where we get lost with anger is where it's self-righteous, automatic, unconscious, reactive, separating ourselves from our hearts, separating our hearts from others, polarizing. Anytime the anger takes those forms, it's actually helpful to suspend action, to pull back from it. That is the kind of anger that's destructive. Again, reactive, automatic, comes with the narrative of self-righteousness, tends not to be empathic, doesn't touch the heart in relation to self or other. So that's what we want to look out for when we're studying anger. And we want to find ways to work with that kind of anger when it comes up. One of the main ways to work with it is to work with the heart practices that are so important for us, to work with loving kindness, with compassion, with forgiveness. I've mentioned at times that interpersonally, compassion and forgiveness can be more skillful heart practices with interpersonal difficulties than metta or loving kindness. Because compassion and forgiveness practices, which we've learned at times here, and which we'll be working with next week, tend to go and touch, and we touch the pain of the situation, which opens our heart and softens the heart and can lead to, oh, this is hard, this is painful, which tends to knock us out of our self-righteous position. And so the heart practice is very crucial, partly also when we're stuck. If I'm stuck with anger, I could use metta, I could use compassion to get unstuck. One of the core uses of these heart practices, but we have to practice them every day or they're not strong enough. Anger will win. Okay, so the heart practices. And then I think from an ethical point of view, can be very helpful to keep with the ethical guidelines, the guideline of not harming others. And not using speech, which is harmful for others. To work, again, that's part that goes back to that point about when we find ourselves react with the reactive kind of anger, the self-righteous, position-driven anger, very good time to suspend saying anything or doing anything, take a time out, do some heart practices. And the ethical guidelines can remind us of this because they are guidelines for not harming ourselves or others. And if we regularly commit to the precepts, that will be partly a wake-up call when there's anger. So I had some further thoughts about the value of working with and transforming anger in terms of our being in the larger society and justice, but I think I'll just be very brief there. I've mentioned that I thought I'd read a few comments from Gandhi. Anger controlled, and I would interpret that as meaning worked with skillfully. Anger controlled can be transmuted into a power which can move the world. Martin Luther King Jr., the supreme task is to organize and unite people so that their anger becomes a transforming force. And I think if you listen to King's speeches, you can see there's a transformed anger there. There's the energy of anger. Do you hear that in a speech? And yet it's connected with love. Isn't that remarkable? Do you know what I'm talking about? And that energy, there's an energy there in which the anger has not been suppressed. It's been transformed, right? It's been worked with. So very, very remarkable. So let me just close so we have some time for talking together. This is something from the end of that essay by Robert Masters called Compassionate Wrath. Bringing one's anger into one's heart is not only an act of love for oneself, but for all beings, since such a practice greatly increases the odds that anger will not be allowed to mutate into aggressiveness, hostility, and hatred, but rather into compassion-centered activity. In no longer abandoning or destructively harnessing our anger, we move a little closer to being the very love that we most desire from others. Anger can be love. May we permit it to be so. So thank you. So there's a lot there. Why don't we sit for a moment, and then I'll invite some discussion. We can use the, do we have the mic? Okay, very good. Maybe just reflect on what landed, what was most important, as well as any questions. So please, let me invite any questions. We have one here and one here.
I have trouble with this self-righteous anger.
And, yeah. And
transforming it. When I came the first time last week, and then the problem with self-righteous, if you know you're right and someone else is wrong, it's a knowledge question. I mean, technically, I know certain things. I'm an architect, and someone's doing something completely stupid. Got me very angry.
Yeah.
And my transfer of heart anger was I ended up in the hospital with a potential heart problem, which came out positive, but that seems to where it goes when I don't resolve those correctly.
Right. So we want the question is about what to do in a situation where we think maybe we're right.
We are right.
Or the statement was, we are right, no question. I think it's helpful to use the qualifying phrase, we think we're right. I will urge that, but we can come back to that.
Okay.
I won't go with that point, but too much. But then, so the question of what to do, because in some ways of not dealing with the anger led to certain heart issues. Yeah, actually this morning, maybe some of you heard it, I was driving here and I was listening to KPFA, and they had a program by a man with a man named Mario Martinez, who's a neuropsychologist, and he was citing research that said that the expression of righteous anger lowers blood pressure, but the expression of self-righteous anger is harmful. It's interesting. So again, he made that same distinction between two types of anger. And so the key, and this is not easy, I think the key, let's say you're an overseer of an architectural project, and let's say you're even in charge, and you're very clear that someone did something wrong, right? And you become, let's say you become angry. So the question is, how could one work skillfully with that anger? So we avoid really two extremes. One, this is really key. The action component is going to be to avoid two extremes. The extremes are first, just the automatic, non-mindful reaction, angry reaction. We want to avoid that, but we also want to avoid suppression. We want to avoid the suppression of the anger or the being overly nice, which actually suppresses the energy of anger, right? So how do we find that middle way? That's what I'm suggesting. I sense that's what you're looking for, right? Yeah, and so as with a lot of the work here, the guideline would be to do both inner work and work on the outer skillful expression and see both as necessary in this instance. In other words, a certain amount of inner work, it might be that you actually say, I'm really angry, I'm reactive right now, it's not a good time, right? But I want to come back later. So I tell, and you maybe communicate to that to someone. Thich Nhat Hanh in his community has what's called a peace treaty, and he says any conflict has to be worked with within a week. But also be very careful about the timing. It's part of the meaning of skillful speech is good timing, right? And so in the moment when you're reactive, might not be a good time. And it can be very skillful then not to speak, but to agree to come back later, or it's going to go inward. And so, in the interim, you could do some inner work. You can sit with it. You can actually sometimes deliberately bring up the anger, work with it, see what's there, maybe do something like that process that I described, see what it's like in the body, watch the thoughts, just be with it. Watch where it goes, watch what's beneath it. Sometimes you have to give it some time to know, and how does it maybe connect in with just my own patterns, right? How does it connect in with, like in my example, with something that might be a pattern? Oh, I feel alone or something like that. You know, each of us has patterns. Strong emotions will tend to trigger a lot of old patterns, right? So we want to be able to track those, right? Know those, feel what's beneath it, maybe get to that sense of, oh, you know, probably, again, anger is typically a cover emotion. So, meaning that if you look deeply enough, you'll always find something beneath it that's a different emotion. That takes time. That takes some inquiry. You can take that for granted that that's the case, you know, and look. And then, so that's the inner work. And we could say a lot more. Maybe you do metta. Maybe you do some forgiveness. And then you come to speak, and maybe you're in a more centered or balanced place. And you can bring in the expression, you know, when that happened, I was really angry. You know, but you can do so with empathy towards yourself and towards the other in a connective way. And again, this is lots going to depend on the nature of the relationship, but a relationship where you can have actually honesty about what's happening in a skillful way deepens the relationship. It makes it more likely to be skillful in the future. So there's a lot more I could say about skillful speech, but that's a very short version.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Please. Yeah.
Donald, I didn't know whether or not you've ever read the psychologist, Sue Johnson's book that came out about 2 years ago called Love Sense, that is extraordinarily helpfully written about relationships. And her major point that's so helpful to me, I'm a family therapist, is that she looks at the troubles in relationships in three tiers, and the top tier being irritation, frustration, and the bottom tier being fear of abandonment, essentially, and the middle tier that's avoided is pain, is the heart pain of a disconnection and loneliness, and how that there's a way in which for many family relationships, people stay stuck in the anger, as you say, as a cover for the deep fear of being disconnected, and especially the middle tier, section around pain. I just wanted to recommend it because it's
thank
very
you.
Good.
Sue Johnson.
Sue Johnson, Love Sense.
Love Sense, and it connects with much of what I was saying, and that's why I think the inner investigation of the anger is so important. It really is helpful to know what's beneath the anger, to know, oh, there's some pain. And conceptually, it's not so hard to understand, right? That, you know, I'm angry here, but what I'm really angry about is I don't feel as connected. Or not really what I'm angry about, but the kind of the emotion might be the sadness of being disconnected, or I don't think I'm heard or seen or whatever it is. And the anger is there. Anger, in some ways, can be quite defensive, kind of protecting ourselves. Please, we have one here and then one up front.
Thank you very much for this particular talk. This is a comment mostly. Since a small child, I explored this whole issue of anger in myself and my family, and then as I grew older in the society at large. And what I concluded was that anger is merely an expression of deep pain and fear. Those are the two things that I have come to conclude, especially in my own family. And I always considered myself as not a very angry person. And there are times, however, when I do get when I explode in anger. But once I explode, it's all over with. Mm-hmm. Then I move on. And that was something I learned from my mother. On the other hand, my brother carries his anger with him, and he lives with his anger on his shoulders. And he denies that he's angry. He sees himself as a soldier. He's going to charge on. But so this denial of his anger, and mm-hmm. I know where it comes from as a small child, when he was abandoned, he addresses that, but he doesn't see how that mm-hmm. expresses itself in his anger today. So when, and I see other people who have anger but don't deny it.
Right.
And it's clear to me that that's comes from some deep-seated pain or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yet, how do you work with somebody like that to help them? Or is it your role to help them
how to work with another? Yeah. I should say, to back up, you were talking about the anger exploding and then you feel okay. A question could be, are the people around you okay? So we would want, because again, maybe you were using explode in a metaphorical sense that didn't sound as bad as it was. But yeah, again, because I think the suggestion here is we could call it a middle way between the automatic reactions. Explosion can sound like that. I don't know if that's what you were meaning. But between the automatic reaction and the suppression, right? We want to find the middle ground where we're coming out of the heart, where we're actually skillful and so forth. And that's not an easy middle ground. And that's really what we look for. Yeah, with someone else, with someone else who's either on the, we could call the first, the acting out side or the suppression side, how do you work with that person? That's a big question. I would say, if you can especially do your own work with anger, that will go a long way. Then you can be empathic. You can be empathic. You can touch the pain. It depends, of course, entirely on your relationship, with the person. And the person may or may not be open to changing. Some people may be, some not. But usually there has to be some willingness to explore options on either side. And there are also very old patterns. What I'm calling the acting out or the suppressing have been repeated, like 100,000 times. There's a certain amount of momentum with the neurons. And so, again, it's going to depend on the relationship. If there was someone, so I would think, there'd be all sorts of ways to approach it. I think your own modeling of skillful work with anger could be a very big factor. So people learn not by you telling them what to do, but by watching and maybe being curious. Might be a very, very good approach. Let me just take, there was one more, Bonnie, and then we'll finish up.
When angry and kind of with a pause, able to see the sort of the self-righteous anger
yeah.
part and kind of shred that, thankfully, and still realize, okay, so then I won't respond like this, but oh yeah, there's something there that for other people's sake, I should take further. But it just seems like such a bother then, because I've gotten over my own stuff with it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I could give the example.
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, what do you do to still kind of care enough to want to spend the time and the bother when personally it's like, okay, I could be over that?
Right. Well, I think it's probably, again, it's going to be very context dependent. The question is about when to follow up on having been angry. And maybe there's a legitimate point. That's connected with the anger, and when to stand up for that point or that that issue or that concern, and when not to. I think, you know, I can't really give a general or abstract answer, but it's going to depend on the context. And I think it's going to be really probably your own inquiry and asking what sits with my integrity. You know, and again, it's a matter of being skillful, you know, with situation. I remember, you know, just to give a few thoughts that come to mind. I remember being with an organization where I had a very good radar for all the problems with the organization. And I'd get a certain amount frustrated, angry sometimes. And if I was always expressing what I was angry about, I came to the conclusion at a certain point, I will not be effective. I have to choose, you know, and I will also tend to burn myself out. And so for me, it was actually very helpful to realize, let me, quote unquote, pick my battles. This is actually, for me, in that situation, very, very skillful. So I didn't have to deal with everything. But I actually tried to be skillful in the moment and ask the questions of what's most important, what do I want to act with, what helps my own balance over the time, so I'm not just the complaining individual or the one who always raises issues, and the organization actually is not capable of receiving my input, really. It's not going to work, right? So, you know, that comes to mind. Those issues might be parallel in interpersonal situations. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So, okay, we've had one time with anger done. I actually took most of my thoughts on anger, and I could have easily done a few sessions. But like I say, maybe I'll bring some of this into next time. But my invitation would be, to, if this calls you, to take as an intention to work with anger in the next week, meaning maybe in the morning, set an intention. If you're having trouble locating anger, a legitimate practice is to actually bring a situation to mind that was in the past and bring it to mind, and you can sometimes work with it internally and actually deliberately go into that territory. You know, if we wait around sometimes for anger, it might not be there, but we can access and learn from bringing it to mind and just seeing what it feels like, exploring it and so forth. But let me invite you, if you, again, feel called to work with anger. You can look for that Robert Masters essay, quite wonderful, Compassionate Wrath. It's on the web. I have a chapter in that book on anger. And there are a lot of other good sources, some very good work. There's I think one of the books I like the best, I don't have a reading list here, but Harvey Aronson, who's a psychologist, has a very, very good book called I forget what it's called, Western Practice or Buddhist Practice on Western Ground. I don't know if that's the title or the subtitle. Aronson, Aronson. And I think a very, very skillful book, one of the best I know on anger. And there are other books by quite a few people. So let me invite you to set your intention for the next week, for the next period of time, anything helpful from today, maybe related to anger, maybe something totally different. Just see what comes as an intention coming out of this morning. And may we offer the benefits of our morning together to ourselves, to each other, and then beyond these walls for the benefit of all beings, which circles around with ourselves because we are part of all beings. Okay. So thank you, and may your anger be worked with skillfully.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed continue these offerings, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.